So Ben Lumley is back for our first part two, our first double header, right? And I know what you're thinking. Ben Lumley is a photographer and this is a marketing podcast, right? But it's not what he does that why we've invited him back. It's the how and why that interests me and Steve, right? That's something that we can all learn from.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. So to reconnect the last bit, in case it's been a bit since you last listened to the first episode, in our last conversation, we mentioned the phrase called the mastery of craft. Right, the mastery of your craft we were talking about. And me and Steve had a chat and we wondered what the ingredients were to the mastery of craft. And we figured out there might be creativity in there, right? There might be some kind of knowledge or learning and definitely an element of persistence. So that's where I thought we'd kick off today, Ben.
Sounds good.
With that mastery of craft continuation, like what goes into the mastery of craft? Because it was your
I shouldn't have said it. Now I feel like I should have just said something else and carried on. It's so big, like it's a big thing. Like I don't see mastery of craft as, you know, it's not learning to 100 push-ups. It's not something simple like learning a phrase in a different language. It's like knowing the absolute ins and outs of it. And it's the technical side of things for me. Like I wouldn't say I'm a particularly technical photographer. You can't ask me about all the specific specifications on a camera and I'll be able to rattle them off. I'm no photo nerd like that, but like I understand how my cameras work. I understand the ins and outs of how all my cameras, how all my lenses, how all my gear interacts together. I understand how to get the most out of that gear. And then once you've mastered the technical side of things, it then becomes easier to actually be creative, I think, because I heard someone once say, it was either a YouTube video or a podcast or something, way, way, way back when I first started photography, like way, way back. And it's kind of always sat in my head ever since, was that you should be able to pick up your camera to your eye and know exactly what that's going to look like.
Right.
And like, so I should, in theory, if you're a master of the craft, if you know what you're doing, if you're good at taking photos, you know, in my small world, you should know exactly what it's going to look like before you pick that camera up, and so that you're already kind of constructing everything in your head before you ever physically do anything. So like that's always stuck with me, that ability to just know the gear inside out then opens that creativity up, because you know what you can do and what you can't do, and you know what your limitations are and where you can push the boundaries a little bit, and all those kind of things, like for me, really come into mastery. And it isn't about, you know, copying anyone else particularly. It's not about, you know, doing it like others have done it. It's about you finding a way that works for you and then being able to repeat that over and over and over again. I have to say to like photographers, and I've said it publicly and stuff before, that like anyone can take really good photos, but a professional photographer can take really great photos repeatedly on demand to meet a specification and a brief, and it becomes quite a little bit like a product. Like you're able to just replicate it anytime you need to. And yeah, like I'll have days where I'll shoot awfully, but I know that like the client's getting really good stuff out of it, but that's my yardstick, that's not theirs. So like mastery is just that ability just to be able to, for me, pick a camera up and just know exactly how I'm going to take that photo and be able to then work through the creative process in order to get to the end result. You two all know this,
yeah.
who this is. I can't think of life me think off the top of my head who it is, but there's like the creative gap I don't know whether you guys have heard of the Create Bat. I can't remember who came up with the concept, but it's that idea of like what's in your head and then the finished article. And the better you get at mastery, the closer that gap becomes, because there's less of a jump between like what you have in your head and your end result. At the start, when you first begin, like the gap's huge. And for a lot of people, it's massively disconcerting. And for an awful lot of people, they go, nah, you're all right, I'll try something else. But for those of us that persevere and keep going and are persistent, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier on, like eventually over time that gap closes, and then you're able to see stuff in your head and like create pretty much as close as you can get to it, you know. And that for me is mastery. And I would happily say right off the bat, I am not a master. Like, I don't feel myself as a master of the craft. Like, I know I'm good. Yeah. Like, I know I can produce solid results, but I don't put myself up there with the masters. But what I do know is that I've really put the time and the effort. Like, those 10,000 hours were years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I've really, really put a lot into the craft. I know that. And I can say that honestly. You know, mastery is... whether I'm a master of what I do is down to other people's minds.
Yeah, that, I was going to say that actually, because it's one of them labels like expert and good and stuff that people who are douches call themselves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then...
sorry, I'm just going to change my Instagram bio to...
yeah, immediately change LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But like it all, and thought leader and stuff that, right? Like, it's all right if other people call you that, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think, and I think it's probably a sign of being one, that you go, I'm definitely not, because you're at a level where you know your craft so much that you're pretty much aware what you don't know.
Yeah. Right? And also you're at a level where that label doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like that label becomes irrelevant.
Yeah. You're not trying to prove anything because you've done the work, right? You've built the foundations, your 10,000 hours, right? Mm-hmm. You've got enough natural kind of now ability and aptitude and foundational knowledge that it allows you to be creative, right? It allows you to stop worrying that everything will be like going wrong and look forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
But I think it's that.
I think there's two things to mastery. I think there's more than two, but actually I think there's two different versions of what mastery can be. So to be a master of your craft, I think you're never actually a master of your craft. Because you're always looking to the new thing. You're always trying to learn the next step. And unless you can 100% guarantee, sit there and say, I know absolutely everything, there is no more information to consume about what I do or how I do it, then you can say you're a master at your craft, but you can't otherwise. I think it comes down, a lot of the word mastery comes down to what Simon Sinek says around leadership and management. Actually, managers who say that they are leaders are not leaders. Somebody else has got to say that you're a leader.
Yeah.
And somebody else has got to say that you're a master at what you do.
Yeah,
unless you can 100% prove what you know 100% of everything about it.
Yeah.
And it comes down to when I originally, like when I first left school and I went into the decorating trade, there were time-served people who knew everything about decorating and they were masters of their craft. And they were awarded being a master in their industry after studying it for 7 years and then practicing for a further 20. And at that point, you received your mastery statement.
Mm.
And it takes time. It's all about time and knowledge. That's where mastery comes around from.
It's not a six-week course.
It's not. No.
Yeah.
It's not.
Always makes me chuckle when I see things on social media about, oh, yeah, learn to be able to be a professional photographer in 6 weeks.
Yeah. The amount of people during lockdown who have become graphic designers for a 20-pound course
God.
Is ridiculous.
I know. I saw an Instagram meme thing. It wasn't a meme, but it was a genuine piece of self-improvement advice of a great idea for a new business was to become a photographer. because you just can do all this really, really cool stuff. And forget the fact that you need to learn how to be a photographer. Like, a really good business idea would just be to go and get a camera and be a photographer. Right, okay.
How many times have you heard, though, Ben, iPhone's a better camera than a DSLR now, so just go out there and start shooting with your iPhone.
Even Chase Jarvis.
More than often.
Chase Jarvis does a course about, or something about the best camera you've got is the one with
you. Yeah, 100% agree.
Something like that, right?
Yeah, 100% agree. But the thing with that is that, like, my phone is a Huawei something or other, can't remember, P5X, something massive, giant tablet thing. And the photos that it takes are comparable to my DSLR cameras, but what I can do on a DSLR camera, I can't do on a mobile phone. But in the same breath, what some incredible mobile phone photographers can do, can't do on a DSLR. It's just, it's the part of mastery that I just wish more photographers would get. And I wish more creatives would get, is that it isn't actually about the tool. Nobody went up to Michelangelo and went, flipping heck, that's good. What tools do you use? What are your paintbrushes? Yeah. Like, it's the stupidest set of questions ever. Like, I get it all the time. Or what lens do you use, or what cameras do you use, or, you know, I'm going to spend some money. What gear should I upgrade to? It doesn't, like, whatever, like, use whatever you want. And I've seen some people do some amazing stuff on mobile phones. And then I get my mobile phone out on a long run, like today, in the wet and the cold, and the photo just looked garbage. And it's like everybody's different, but I know if I had a DSLR down there and, you know, some nice lenses, I could probably come up with something pretty cool. But it's just, I just wish people would get away from the notion that in order to master your craft and be really, really good as a creative, you know, you need a certain piece of equipment, and it's that gear lust, and it's ridiculous. You know, as a graphic designer, you don't go, well, actually, the only way I can be an amazing graphic designer is to have this pencil. Yeah. You know, forget about the thought process in your head. All you need is this one pencil, and that's it. You're just made for life. It's just crazy.
That goes into positive attitude, though, doesn't it? It starts to move into that, you know, I've got the latest thing, therefore I'm going to be better, which gives people that heightened sense of, you know, it gets rid of some insecurity somewhere along the line. You know, I know some graphic designers who always buy the latest pencils because they feel like they draw better with them. It's nothing to do with how good they are at drawing. It's down to that. Actually, it puts them into half glass half full rather than half empty in that time.
Yeah.
That's it. There's an interesting thing about tools. There's that really old saying, right? Or that really old analogy about...
I mean, I'm not that old, Tim, so, you know.
No, not yours. Not one of yours, mate.
Okay.
But it's about that, about a guy who goes into a factory to fix a machine, and he wanders around the machine for 9 minutes looking at it, and then takes a hammer out and hits the machine, and then turns to the guy and goes, well, that's £10,000. And he's like, well, you were only here 10 minutes and you hit it once. He was like, yeah, but it's £9,999 to know where to hit it.
Yeah.
And £1 for hitting it.
Yeah, precisely.
It's that tool, like understanding the tools and be able to use the tools, whatever. So in marketing, like I'm relaying it back to channels. Like, people ask me, oh, well, what's the best, should I email or Instagram? I was like, I don't care. Like, do whatever. Understand where your customer is and use that one. Like, the important stuff is how you use the tool, not which tool you're using.
Yeah.
Do you know
exactly? For talking of channels and from a marketing point of view, because this is a marketing podcast, obviously, you know, like, for a long time, I was very Instagram focused because it's a very pictorial platform. It always has been a very pictorial platform. And a lot of triathlon stuff goes in there, and less triathlon and running stuff goes on Twitter. But I've noticed quite a big shift in the last 18 months, 2 years for me. I know COVID and stuff, but, like, I get an awful lot more interaction on my work. And I mean that from a point of view of people using images, resharing, all that kind of stuff, tagging me into photos that have been taken on Twitter for netball than I do for Instagram. I get, from a purely marketing channels point of view, I get an awful lot more impression and reach out of Twitter for netball than I do for Instagram. But that doesn't mean that I go, oh, Instagram doesn't work anymore. No, it's just for different sports, I get a different set of results. Mm-hmm. So it suits me to it suits me to kind of like tailor what I do and tailor the content that I put out depending on what sport I'm doing. And if I'm doing a lot of netball, then I'll probably spend a little bit more time on Twitter. If I'm doing a lot of rugby or triathlon or whatever it might be, I'll probably spend a little bit more time on Instagram because that's generally where those demographics sit.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, right? Using the right tool for the job.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one of a dafter free. But I wanted to go back to mastery for a second, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people we've referred a couple of times to seeing stuff online and on social about advertising like quick fix courses and, you know, become a master whatever in 3 weeks for $60 or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I wish it that easy. God.
Yeah. But there comes a point where, like, I've been lecturing now for, I don't know, 3 years, maybe, right? And I don't know. Not compared to those PhD guys I'm lecturing with, right, who know, can recite every theoretical marketing study that's ever been. I'm like, I don't know. I just know this stuff works.
Yeah. With
people out there, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's, what's the relationship between knowledge and learning and teaching and mastery? Because I think when you reach a point in your career, I don't know if it's an age or a time or a depth where you start being asked to teach it. You become more of a teacher than a student. Well, not more of a teacher than a student, actually, not that at all, because I'm more student than teacher, definitely. But
you spend more time being a teacher, even though you might not want to necessarily do that. It becomes more of what you do. Yeah, totally.
You feel confident with being able to teach somebody, right?
Yeah. No, agreed. So I had, again, way, way, way back, I don't even think I was a photographer at the time. I think I was just kind of immersed in self-development and motivation stuff. And I read something once about levels, like everybody has a level that they're on. And so as a level two, like it's okay for you to pass advice and teachings and try to help people at level one. That's okay. But it's very difficult for you at level two to teach and explain stuff to a level 10, because a level 10 should in theory know that all of that stuff anyway. Right. So as you, and that's kind of always stuck with me. And so as you go through this kind of mastery thing, as you really kind of hone in on the craft and whatever that creative craft might be, like you are slowly, without realizing, you're slowly moving up levels. And it's actually then okay for you to take that expertise and knowledge and, you know, push it back down the tree a little bit. So at the start of lockdown one, for part one,
yeah,
way back when, a year ago, would you believe? A year ago, wow, at the time of this recording. Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's bonkers. One of the things I decided to do was to create a video course, not on teaching sports photography, because I'm not a particularly, as I've said, I'm not a particularly technical person. And I do a lot of what I do because I have a decent technical knowledge that I don't really think about. And I work from kind of a flow state more than kind of like, oh, well, this at this moment in time, I need to be at 800th of a second. My brain doesn't work like that. But I know that I need to be around that marker in order to get where I want to get. So I started this. I did this video course. It ended up on a video teaching thing. And it was about how to basically make money as a sports photographer, because that's what a lot of sports photographers want to know. It isn't actually how do you capture really good sports photos. How can I make flipping money out of this? Because like, I really want to go and work in the NFL, or I really want to work in Premier League, or I really want to work in at the Olympics, whatever it might be. And people want to know how to make money out of it. They want to know how to turn this crazy hobby, passion, whatever it might be that they have, into a full-time piece of work. So, and I was like, oh, I've got all this stuff and I could teach it. But for a little while, I ummed and ahed about whether I had the expertise to kind of teach it. And then I think I was on a run actually, and I kind of came to the conclusion that it was okay. And I'm not trying to like sell something and sell concepts for making money with sports photography that is like really, really complex. But I know I'm trying to help those people who 2 years beforehand I was in their situation. Like, and I think it's it's okay to get to that kind of teachery point of mastery. And as long as you kind of pitch it right, like I wouldn't walk up to some of the best sports photographers in the world and go, well, actually, you need to do this, this and this, because that would just be wildly inappropriate, massively disrespectful. And I don't think I'd stay in the room very long. But, you know, those sports photographers coming up who are just starting out or who want to, you know, get into the world of making money from this, like I can impart a little bit of wisdom and knowledge onto them, and if they want to take it up, they take it up, and that's up to them. But I do think part of mastery eventually ends you up into some kind of teaching, whether that's a formal teaching lecturing position or whether you just start sharing knowledge with other people and helping them along. It's still all teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never want to go into like full-time teaching stuff now.
Yeah,
I really wouldn't. Like, I would never go, right, okay, I've done what I've done. I'm going to put the cameras down. Now I'm going to teach everybody how to do it. I just don't want to do that. But for me, being able to pass stuff on through, you know, YouTube or the new blog that I launched last week or, you know, the video course or anything like that, then I'm more than happy to do that, because I can give little nuggets of advice to people. That's fine.
Can you imagine how good the world would be, no matter what trade or industry or organization you inhabit, right? If you learned something new, right, teach it one other person. Do you imagine? Yeah. Can you imagine the continual improvement, right? The feeling that if everybody was going around, I learned this thing today, check this out. Do you know what I mean? Like what that would be. And I was like, do you know what? I love that. And I was like, if above anything, we're all teachers, try and teach a customer something about your product or service, or try and teach a colleague, or try and teach a, you know, a newbie, a startup, a younger person.
Yeah.
I was a teacher for like 3 years. So I've got a teaching qualification in the, you know, I'm not a master at it though. Trust me.
That's what I went to university for, be a primary school teacher. Very soon left that world.
I did it for 2 years and went, that's enough, thanks. Don't want to teach ever again.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is, people get there's a miscommunication on what teaching is. And actually, when you're a teacher in front of a classroom, you know, delivering something, you're never delivering your own stuff. You're always doing to a national standard, or you're always being having to do it to the book so they can pass an exam, or they're having to do it and set through coursework or whatever it is. The better way to learn is by learning from people who have already done.
Yeah.
And that's where I think this whole teaching thing that we're discussing here is actually, it's just about mentorship.
Yeah.
Having somebody who's done it before who you can learn from to ask those questions. And I think if you reframe that thing of going, am I good enough to be a teacher, to actually, could I mentor somebody into doing, not making mistakes that I made?
Yeah, or because, you know, as we go along the journey, we make an awful lot of mistakes, and you know, you don't want other people to make those mistakes. Like, talking of asking questions, I did a thing on my Instagram yesterday. Let me just pull it up. So it was about, oh, of course it's gone, isn't it? Oh no, it hasn't. Hang on a sec. Technology and all that. it was about, I got on a bit of a rant. Sunday night rant, why else would you not? Like, I see a lot of photographers just being idiots with stuff. So I kind of did this reminders thing for sports photographers, like, this is what you should be doing. And one of them was, and it's just interesting, we're talking about like mentoring and like helping people along with mistakes. And I was like, a reminder, just don't be afraid to ask for help from people ahead of you. Like, genuine photographers who value the work won't have an issue with helping you along, as they won't see you as your threat. If they see you as a threat, move on, ask somebody else. Don't be too proud to ask for help. And I think, you know, a lot of up and coming creatives are afraid to ask.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you should bombard people with questions, but if you've got like something really, really nagging at you, I don't see the harm in asking someone. I mean, don't be an idiot about it, and, you know, ask nicely, go through the right channels, do it sensibly, you know, be respectful of the person you're asking for, but like, don't be afraid to ask for help, because actually a lot of those people that you look up to that you want to ask for help probably have a little bit of time to help and mentor and teach and guide and show you the mistakes that they made. I heard Jim yeah, it was Jim Rowan once on an audio thing said, wouldn't it be amazing if instead of having workshops and seminars from really successful people, we got a failure up on stage and quizzed him for an hour about why he failed, what he did wrong. You know, imagine the things you'd learn from that 1 hour session. It'd be amazing. But yeah, we don't do that. We put the highly successful people up on a pedestal and listen to them, you know, wax lyrical for.
Well, it goes back to our original conversation though, in part one, where, you know, people like Gary Vee, he's very successful, but he often stands there and talks about his failures.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lovely one where he talks about the fact that, like, he was just about to go on to do a keynote and he got an email to say that he'd sort of lost something like $30 million in a investment or something. Like, there was this massive, like, contract issue that lost him a stack load of money, and then he walked out on stage. And, like, that stuff happens all the time. Like, people don't see the times you get told no. People don't see the times that it goes wrong. People don't see the times when you lose money, you know, you get used. Or, I mean, people don't see that. They just see, oh, he's doing well, isn't he? Or, yeah. She's doing well, isn't she?
How much did you make this year? Wow, yeah. You've done all right for yourself.
Absolutely.
See, people, that's this whole social media echo chamber idea thing, though.
Social media highlight reel of life, as Chase Jarvis calls it.
Like, you don't put a continual stream of, I sent 12 cold emails today, no one answered them. Like, that's not very interesting, is it? Like, you go, but if you follow, like, I mean, people put bad stuff on if they're having a rough time and stuff like that. And
yeah, but they never do, there's never the stuff in the middle. And this is what frustrates, I'm going to get on my soapbox.
No, go for it.
Right. This is what frustrates me about social media. There's the whole, like, look at me, I'm doing brilliantly and I've got all these wonderful experiences, and I will put my hand on my heart and say I'm like that. Like, you know, I've posted pictures from around the world when I've been in a sunrise or sunset, and it's amazing. Like, life's good. But then what you get is the flip side of everyone going, my life's awful and everything's negative and blah, 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 blah. And it's always like the absolute extreme, and there's never the bit in the middle. Like you say, oh, I've sent 12 cold emails today, nothing, you know. You know, I've sat watching Netflix because there's something else to do, where I haven't got the motivation to get up, or I've been hitting refresh on my email so much today that I've basically crashed Gmail because, like, I'm just waiting for emails to come in, or well, that invoice was meant to be paid today, but it hasn't. And that's kind of thrown me a little bit. And now I don't really know what to do myself. And people don't talk about that stuff. No. And I'm not saying that I'm going to go on as of today and start talking about it, but in social media, we have this highlight reel of life, which is extremes of I'm doing really, really well, look at me, look how great things are, and things are really, really awful, and, you know, I'm going to put up lots of cryptic tweets about people that you could read into and you could not read into, and all right, and there's always that massive kind of gap between the two, and it's never like, this is the mundane of life, and it is what it is.
That's, I mean, it reminded me of one of them cartoons that do the rounds on the social media, right there. It looked at the normal growth curve, like the hockey stick entrepreneurial growth curve, right? Mm-hmm. And then went, like, zoomed in, like, magnified in, and it was like, like, if you're over a week, you've gone up and down many times, but if you look back over 5 years, it looks beautiful.
Absolutely.
But actually,
my weight chart. So I weigh every day because it gives me an average over a week, but it does mean that my weight chart goes, like, up and down ridiculously. But when you smooth that weight chart out over, I don't know, 52 dots on a year axis, it looks lovely and smooth, but actually in reality, it's going up, it's going all over the place. And, you know, that's often how life is. Like, you have I think we said it before in the last episode, was like, you have these moments that are like, oh my God, this is just mind blowing. And then you sat pegging washing out and thinking, what's happened? Like, why have we gone from this amazing high to this radical low? It's just, it is the way it is.
It's like 94% of the time is just the stuff. It's just the other 6% is either good or bad. Mainly it's just Tuesday.
It's just Tuesday. It's pretty much, yeah. You need branded t-shirts with that on.
Maybe I will when I get to mastery stage and I'm
do it.
we can have that. But I was talking to a friend of mine, Nikki McGill. Big up Nikki McGill, who's a running coach, but she lives in Devon. And I've been running terribly, right? Like just rubbish.
Right, that's you're making that sound like you flail your arms around when you run, or that you've rather than you're just not running very consistently. I'm running terribly. Suggest that like
I'm not
just
very good
on
at
one leg and
probably
like,
all of that
randomly hitting people as you walk run
like
past,
all of like, the above.
Right? Okay,
it's a bit like Phoebe on Friends.
Yeah. That's running terribly.
Yeah, all of the above, chaps. All of the above. But which I think you know, my erratic styling over the past 2 weeks has affected the pace and distance and breathing and stuff. So I DM'd it, like you said, Ben. I was like, Nikki, I'm running shit. Like, what's going on with me? Why am I getting worse? Right? And she was like, ah, you'll be all right. Let's jump on the Zoom. And she and I was going through my calls. Look, this one was 14 seconds a mile slower than the day before. Why did I lose 14 seconds a mile? I only went 4 miles. Like, do you know what? And this was like, but look at last time last year. And I was like, yeah. So we're like, you're 3 minutes a mile faster. I'm like, right.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. That's fair enough. And she was like, just get a bit of perspective. Like, you're not getting worse. You've just run rubbish because you can't run perfectly all of the time. Jesus Christ.
But this is kind of part of mastery. It's that ability to be in a situation and go, hang on, what's going wrong here? And be able to pull yourself out of that situation, kind of rise above it, go up to that helicopter viewpoint, whatever you want to refer to it as, and go, okay, well, this might be the reason. So, like, I know if I'm having a bad day with cameras in my hand, I know if I step back 9 times out of 10, I've either probably not slept very well a few days before, like I'm not very well rested. My diet and what I've been drinking hasn't been great. So I might have been having like a lot more caffeine or a lot of bad food that generally affects my creativity in that regard, or kind of, I haven't been doing the simple things that I do like journaling or meditating, all those kind of things. So once they all go out the window and when I'm not sleeping well, and when I'm not eating and drinking right, that's when my creativity starts to really slip. So for example, this weekend coming, I've got 4 days on the bounce for Super League Netball. We do Friday night, Saturday afternoon, evening, Sunday afternoon, evening, and Monday evening. And they're going to be really long days. And I know the stuff that I produce on a Monday night will not be as good as it will be on Friday night, because I'll have had 4 days and I wouldn't have been sleeping great because I'm staying away. I never sleep particularly well when I'm away. Food is great, but like I'll be grabbing it on the go, which is never good. And you know, I won't have a chance to exercise because I'll actually be running myself ragged trying to get lots and lots of photos. And that stuff really, really chips away. And part of mastery is being able to step back in those moments and go, right, well, I know what's causing this. I might not be able to affect change right now, but I know what's causing this or what the likely causes of it is. So let's go back and try and fix some of those. And it's like steering a tanker. Like you can make a correction, but it's going to take a little while to get back.
You have seen me run.
Yeah, you were that guy who shot past me this morning.
Not like it, not in a tanker, dude.
In his tracksuit bottoms, drilling his arms up this hill. He's like, right, yeah, you carry on, mate. I've got 6 more miles to do. You sprint up this hill and kill yourself. I don't mind. But part of mastery is being able to step back and go, right, okay, things aren't working. And I think I can probably figure out why. And it's because I haven't done the basics, rather than just going, well, why is this? You know, how long have you been running, Tim?
On and off for donkey's years, probably this time, like consistently this time for 18 months, probably.
Okay. So I've been running for just over 11 years. I worked this out on my run this morning. And that's given me an awful lot of perspective that I can go, well, my mile splits are a bit slower now today. I wonder why my mile splits are slower today. Well, it's because I'm on a 10-mile long run and I haven't run 10 miles for a few weeks. So I'm going to be a bit naturally slower. And I did a really tough HIIT session yesterday and it really, really ruined my legs. And I didn't sleep particularly well last night because I was up watching Netflix until 1 a.m. Like, it's that ability and having that perspective, because you've done so much of it, that as a creative, it just allows you to step back and go, right, I think I know the answers to this. And understanding that you aren't going to be perfect every day. You're not going to run the best mile every day. You're not going to draw, you know, the best customer logo every day.
No.
I'm not going to take the best, and it is about an ebb and flow. And part of mastery is understanding that. And then when when it seems to not be going right consistently, being able to step back and go, I think I might understand why I'm here. And then you can start to correct it and get out.
You know, that's exactly what Nikki, not that you know, I'm anywhere near mastering running, but she said, right, you're not a bad runner, right? It's nothing to do with, like, look at the other stuff. Like, have you been sleeping? What's your diet been like? Are you stressed out? Because your running hasn't have changed, right? It's been 2 weeks of not being where you expect to be, but that's you doing that to you. You're now going out going, I'm running rubbish at the moment, and then you have a rubbish run. Of course you have a rubbish run, because you haven't, you're focusing on the thing, right? The work, not the other stuff. Like, you're not, like, if you have a bad shoot or somebody has a bad, like, draws a bad brief or a bad marketing campaign or something, right? It doesn't make them a bad X, right? A bad creative, just because you've done it wrong once, you know, or it's not gone as well as your own expectations tell you it should have. But she said it's to do with stress, food and sleep. And I'm like, oh, do you know what? This did happen. And she'd be like, oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Like, you had a...
It reminds me that I sent you a link earlier today, Tim, with Matthew McConaughey's... I don't know if you've seen it, Ben. Matthew McConaughey's released like a motivational video that's like 9 minutes long.
I've not seen the video, but I've seen his new book that's got out.
Yeah.
Well, not that ready.
It's called Absolute Motivation. And do you know what? I watched it for 9 minutes and I came away feeling a little bit empowered. I think he's got a sexy voice anyway, hasn't he?
Oh, God, yeah.
But he says one thing in there that really rang true with me, and it's very close to what you're just discussing now, which is he says he got to become a better actor when he defined the five things in life that he could look after and make the most impact in. Yep. Everything else came on top.
Yep.
So he said he wanted to be a great husband. He wanted to look after his family. He wanted to get a good night's rest. He wanted to make the right choices in his career, and he just wanted to be happy. So every decision he ever made was just along those five things.
Yep.
And he talks about how some start to run out of fuel and you've got to top them up. And sometimes you put too much into one, so one starts to decrease. But actually, you've got to try and keep all five of those things level, then everything else comes.
Yeah. Your craft comes from the stuff, you know, like you said a little while ago, Tim. It's the stuff that most people don't see. It isn't, you know, that you've created an amazing marketing brief. It's the fact that you ate well, slept well, you know, you didn't have that much stress this week, and you were able to really, really focus. And, you know, it's not about drawing up the perfect kind of piece of design for a client, because that doesn't happen in isolation. It happens because, you know, you've been in a groove for the last week or so, because you've been looking after yourself and you've been doing the basics and you've not overworked yourself and you've paced yourself and all those kind of things. That's the stuff.
So mastery then is not about a skill. It's not about knowledge. Mastery is about knowing yourself.
Yeah. I know more about myself these days than I've ever done. And I think that informs the work I do. And I don't mean that in a really artistic way, in the regard that I pick my camera up and go, oh, I really know myself. It's just because I've got a really much better understanding, much deeper understanding of what works for me and what makes me a better creative. It allows me to be more creative.
Which
makes me more money. Yeah.
Yeah.
what makes Ben Lumley the best photographer Ben Lumley can be, not what makes a great photographer.
Yep. I have no ambitions of competing with anybody. I just want to be able to walk away from anything going, I nailed that. Absolutely nailed that. Couldn't have done anything more. Really happy.
We spoke a while ago, didn't we? I think it was in Fleury's episode, Steve, about it turned into a rant about doing work you're proud of.
Yeah.
Like,
not a rant. It's not a rant.
Well, it's kind of
passionate discussion.
Yeah.
Passionate discussion, right? On doing work you're proud of, right? Don't, like Seth Godin says again, like, don't ship stuff, like, unless you'd be proud of it, right? Because people used to have, and I know designers still do, like, portfolios of work, right? And I can't, you know, like, hands, like, honestly, Like, I've done a bunch of marketing work for people that's been good. Like, they've liked it. I'm not proud of it. I wouldn't put it in a portfolio. Do you know what I mean? But there's been three or four things that I didn't know. The stuff that, if needed to show off, could show off, are stuff that I didn't, like, has been impromptu. People have gone, this is amazing, blah, 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 blah. And I've gone, is it? What do you mean? It's just doing the work. Like, it's
there's that level of, you know, the one thing that I always get picked up on in one of the jobs that I was in my career was, oh, I'm a perfectionist. And yeah, I always used to go back to, I'm not a perfectionist. I'm agile. I like to do things quickly. I like things to get things tested and brought back. And I sit back more and more and I go, do you know what? Yeah, I am a perfectionist. And I think that's really important. Because you should be proud of the things that you have done, yeah, knowing that you can't do any more towards it at that time. And, you know, tomorrow you wake up and you'll think, oh, I could have done it slightly differently. But that doesn't matter. Yeah. At that moment, at that time, did you do the most that you could do? That's, and I think that's yourself, really important. Yeah. It's because it's all about yourself.
Yeah. And it goes back to what we were saying a bit ago about the analogy of the guy who goes in, walks around the machine for 9 minutes, then whacks it with a hammer and then produces a massive bill. It's about, you know, you just knowing what works, like, and what works for you, and like not taking 9 minutes to look at something and go, yeah, works better for you than whacking the crap out of it for 10 minutes.
It becomes intuitive, right?
Yeah, and it does. And whether that's being a perfectionist and wanting it to be perfect, or whether it's wanting to be agile and be able to like test stuff and then try again and all those kind of things, that like, it's about self-awareness, and, you know, it's you being self-aware enough to know what works for you. Because once you know what works for you, then it's an awful lot easier to be creative. When you don't know what works for you, creativity is the hardest thing ever. It really is. It's like running through treacle.
Or if you're trying to do other people's, like, emulate is the right word, but do stuff the way, like, I can't write like Seth Godin writes every day. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, and if I was to sit down and try to blog like Seth Godin, I'd be rubbish. Like, I'd be unhappy. In theory, I'm doing the stuff Seth Godin does, right? I'm using the tool, I'm doing the method, right? I've got the process that I've understood from the thingy, but I'm not Seth Godin, right?
It's fine to have him as inspiration. You just got to find your own path.
Where do you stand on the do the work you love versus love the work you do statement, right? Because natural gut, right, is love, like, do the work you love. Like, why would you spend time doing other stuff, right? And Seth Godin, which surprised me, said the other way around. He says because it was a question about purpose, right? And it was that he got from a listener. And he said, it's not about finding your purpose. It's about finding your purpose in the work that you do. So learn to love the work that you do. Stop trying to compare it to this mythical, purposeful path. Right? And I was like, what? What did you say there, Seth? Sorry. I think you've got that wrong, mate. I was like, that was unusual. I've not... I didn't expect it, and it contrasted my belief. So I thought, that's an interesting thing to ask you.
Are they not both the same thing? Surely you should love what you should do, the work you love.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, you should also love what you do.
I think
the thing that a lot of people miss from the creative world, whether that's photographers, designers, copywriters, novel writers, painters, whatever it might be, is that the concept of doing the work that you love is lovely right up until the point that you try and make a business out of it. And then that concept, I think, starts to break down slightly. And I do believe you should be running a business doing the work that you love, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be that high-end, creative, amazing, beautiful, creative work all the time. So you have to love then the work that you do, because that then creates the balance. Because to sit and go, you know, I only do what I love to work on. It's great, but commercially, I don't think it pans out very long because unless you've got a really good benefactor somewhere.
And because 94% of the time it's Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. But part of, you know, mastery and everything else and all that kind of jazz is that you should still love Tuesdays because you get up in the morning and go, it's Tuesday today, so I get to do all of these little bits. And those little bits eventually are going to lead me to do something really, really cool.
Because I love Thursdays and it's only
precisely
a day anyway, right?
Precisely. So I think it is a really interesting standpoint of like, what do you do? It's kind of, it goes back to what Gary Vee always used to say, that used to just confuse so many people and leave people up in arms of like, you know, you should just do your passion. Well, how do you find your passion? No idea. Like it's such a intangible thing to go and find. You just got to go and try lots and lots of stuff. And people don't want to do that. They want to take a test or, you know, do some quiz on Facebook and find out what their passion is. But,
or pay £60 for a course.
Exactly. The passion course. I'm going to just write that down. Hang on a sec. That's what I need to do in the next lockdown.
Simon Sinek does the passion course.
Does he? Oh, damn it. There's always someone in there first. But this is like, I do think that you should have both. Like, I don't think having a mindset of, well, I only do what I love works commercially. And I think for 99% of creatives like us in the world, you have to also have your commercial head on.
And I think, you know, if that makes a lot of sense with the other stuff you've said and what you said, Steve, about Matthew McConaughey, right? If you focus on being the best you, like look after your food, your stress and your sleep and your meditation, right? Then they're the most important things, right? They help you be the best version of you. The rest of the stuff you do on a Tuesday, not dead relevant as long as you've done those. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. No, I agree. And it's like people think that it's being creative is and being a really good creative is just about creating those masterpieces. And that's not, you only create those masterpieces and create that stuff that's really, really special as a creative by just doing the stuff on a Tuesday and, you know, being good at taking care of yourself and, like this hustle culture that we have. And don't get me wrong, I 100% believe that 90% of people could work an awful lot harder than they do.
Sure.
But in that same breath, there's a point where you go, "Ruck, I've done enough now, because if I do any more, I'm going to burn out and then I won't be able to hustle again tomorrow." And, you know, for ages and ages, Gary Vee was all about, you know, hustle and hustle and grind and grind and grind. And then he actually started coming out with telling people that it doesn't matter whether you sleep 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours a day. What matters is what you do while you're awake. And I'm a big believer in that you should work. If you're trying to do stuff, like you should work dead hard and you should hustle and like really, really apply yourself. But then you need to realize that, actually, I need a few days off now because I've done all of this stuff and I've expelled all this energy and now I need to just recuperate and charge those batteries back up and like bring everything back in balance, because that's going to make a huge difference. You know, you can only flog yourself for so long before you actually just, you just run out of everything otherwise.
And the payoff's usually quite far away. I presume it's the same in marketing and strategy as it is in kind of photography and art, right? Like the work I do today and tomorrow, right, is in theory going to pay off in 5 years' time. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So going, "Oh, I've worked really hard," and expecting like an instant gratification is like daft, really.
Do you know? Yeah, and like it isn't, well, I would say on a high level goal point of view for me, yes, 100% agree. Like the work I'm putting in now, the stuff I'm trying to create, it's hopefully going to pay off in 2-4 years time when we get to Olympic Games and Commonwealth Games and I'm able to step into those arenas because I've got the work to back it up. But it's a little bit more instant gratification, I guess, in photography for me. But like I'm always looking up building long-term relationships. I'm never wanting to be particularly transactional and just be, oh, this is just a one-off booking. It's always, there's always a grander plan, which is a little bit longer, whether it's a year, 2 years, 3 years. You know, I stepped into triathlon as a amateur, kind of, as in I didn't have any accreditations or anything, and I did it all from the sidelines as a spectator, and then I worked all my way very slowly all the way through the system right up to the top. And I've done the same with netball, and I'm now trying to do it in other sports. But I know that's the game plan. I'm not like, oh, I'll go and take some photos this weekend, and then bang, instantly I'm like at the top of my field. It doesn't work like that. But interestingly, going back to the hustle thing, I've always found, like, I can flog myself for weeks and weeks and weeks trying to, like, push leads and deal with clients, trying to wrap lots and lots of stuff up and do loads of photo shoots. And I always get to a point where I'm like frustrated and like, right, okay, I've done all this stuff and nothing's happening. And right, what do I do now? And I've always found if I then stop a few days later, it all just starts catching up. And all that hard work and all that momentum that you've built suddenly breaks. And it nine times out of 10 breaks when you stop. I've found like the amount of times that I've worked and worked and worked, taken a few days off, and like a day later, it's like, bang, that email that I've been waiting and working on has suddenly arrived. Like that big opportunity I've been working and waiting on has suddenly arrived. And like, whether that's a universe thing or whatever you want to call it, like that's always been the case for me. Like the more you grind, the more you hustle, when you eventually stop and take a break, that's when stuff starts to catch up. And it just takes a little bit of time for that work and that momentum that you've built to catch up, you know. And for sometimes that is 5 years time, like you, Tim. Sometimes that's 6 months time.
Yeah.
It varies depending on what it is trying to do.
I do think it's a universe thing.
I do. But I don't like to talk about it because it weirds people out. Like, yeah, it does weird. Dancing around a tree kind of thing. But it is. I do believe it's like the universe eventually catches up. Like it knows what's going on, can see what you're trying to do, and then eventually it will catch up.
It's really strange. On another episode with Fleury again, we got into the secret universe stuff, in the secret stuff and what have you. And you know, if you'd asked me a year ago, probably a year and a half ago, I'd have told you what a load of old codswallop. But actually,
then you start to see it happening, and then it happens, and then it's weird.
It is completely weird. But even if you went down into the base level physics of stuff, you know, we're all made of atoms, we're all made of energy, they've all got to interact some way together. Yep. And I'm not here as a preacher for it, either you believe or you don't, I'm not bothered which, but actually, if I've got something I can hold on to that I can do, then that's great. And, you know, you're completely right there, Ben. As soon as you do stuff and then you stop and you think about it, or you take a break away from it, something usually comes around.
Yep. It's really weird. And even now, like I've been doing this for 4 years, even now I still have moments when it happens. I'm like, that's just weird. That's just really, really weird.
Yeah.
And like you put all these, like I'm not a huge believer in The Secret purely on the basis that a lot of people have taken the concept of that book and gone, well, if I think hard enough about stuff, then stuff will materialize. And that the missing piece of the puzzle is you need to go and work really hard for it. But like, it's just really weird. I've had it so many times when, you know, I've put lots and lots of time and effort into something and tried to, like, it's Super League Netball, right? We talked about it in the last episode. I'm bang in the middle of it at the minute. Like, I grafted and grafted and grafted for at least a year when I first started, like really grafted, like put everything I could into it. Really good social media strategy, like contacting lots and lots of people, really building some really, really good key relationships that were massively selfish in my part, because I knew that these individuals would take me into the right places if I built the right relationships. And then, you know, COVID hits and it all goes a bit quiet, and like, but all that momentum is still there. Then I'm out for a 18-mile long run, first few weeks of January, and then bang, massive email. Can we hire you for the whole season? It's behind closed doors. You know, we need you for 140-plus games. You know, you're going to be our main photographer for the whole season. Bang. Like, and I'd stopped for a few weeks because there was nothing else to do. It was after Christmas. I was like, well, I'll just tick along. And bang, this massive email comes in. And the amount of times that's happened is just... It's got to be something. If it's not the universe, it's definitely something.
Yeah, well, people say that you're lucky. but it's
yeah, yeah. Oh, it's all luck. It's all luck.
Yeah. For the last year or so, I've been doing more things. I want to do something in marketing in the cycling world. That's where I want end up eventually. So I'm just doing little bits. And I know that one day something will come through. Yep. And you know what? I'll be a happy bunny then.
I have always said, always from the start of this professional career that I've had, that I've wanted to shoot stuff for Red Bull. Like I've wanted to be able to say I've done something for Red Bull. And now I, as of today, I mean, I don't know where, when did we have our first part?
Last week. So end of February, right?
So I don't know whether I just invoiced for Red Bull or not, but just invoiced a massive, like huge, biggest amount I've ever invoiced for a single image, for one image for Red Bull. And like, and I haven't done it to the point where for years and years, like that's been my sole focus, but I've just chipped away and I've known that, that could be a Red Bull opportunity, or that's the person works for Red Bull. Maybe that's a relationship worth building. You just chip away slowly and slowly and slowly, and then eventually it goes. And it goes back to an analogy I heard years and years and years and years. I mean, today we're clearly digging into my, you know, saying past, like all these motivational things that I've got from way back when, of a, like a stone carver, masonry, masonry?
Stonemason.
There you go. That's one. And the way they apparently, I don't know whether this is actually true or one of those rubbish things you hear on the internet about how stuff actually happens, but it's not actually true. And the way they split marble is they don't like do anything crazy. They just like, he'll just tap it or she'll just tap it in one place and keep tapping and keep tapping and keep tapping and keep tapping. And then it'll look like nothing's happening. And then all of a sudden it'll just split. And it will split perfectly right where they want it to because they've just been applying lots and lots and lots and lots of pressure. And that's what I think mastery is. It's just, it's not these massive leaps. It really isn't these giant, massive leaps. Yeah. It's just chipping away and chipping away and chipping away. And then eventually the whole thing splits and away you go.
But that's perseverance, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Perseverance towards mastery.
Yeah. It only comes by just repeatedly doing it over and over and over again.
When Tim mentioned your name to me before you came on the first episode on the podcast, I watched the Creative Mornings speech talk that you did for Tim.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Which was all around perseverance, realistically. It was all about, you know, I know it was about your ultra marathons and things like that, but it was about running to the next gatepost or to the next field or to whatever it is to get to that end goal.
Yep.
I think that whole perseverance piece is what people miss a lot of the time. It's that continual little tap. It's never giving it up, but also giving it a break at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
And going back and re-tapping it again.
Because if you're a stonemason and you're going at it for 7 days, constantly 24/7, your hands get sore. So what you need to do is you need to do it for a few hours, then have a break and rest yourself and recuperate, and then you can go again and so on and so on. And it's that. You know, I still run with that mentality. I still shoot events and I shoot games with that mentality of, you know, right, just a little bit and right, we'll just get to half time, or, you know, we'll get past this game, or we'll do this, or we'll get to this part of the race and then we'll reassess and see how we're going. And like, that's always the way it should be. You know, I've never, ever expected to kind of do this and then just immediately arrive in the Photography Hall of Fame. It doesn't work like that. It's just very, very slow progress. And as cheesy as it sounds, like actually the climb of it all and just doing it is actually far more enjoyable than probably the outcome will ever be.
You need to go through some of those pitfalls, don't you? So when you do reach the top, when you do reach your pinnacle, when you reach your own level of mastery, you can turn around and say some of it was hard, because if it was easy, it wouldn't be half as much fun.
But I actually like that it's hard because it gets rid of the weaker people.
Yeah.
So like, because it becomes progressively harder, or you have some success and then something really hard kicks in, like it gets rid of the weaker people out of the herd, so to speak, that herd mentality, like it gets the weaker people away. So then it leaves only a handful left. And those people tend to be an awful lot more supportive of each other. And then that builds you up again and that lifts you up again. And, you know, I think it's all part of the process, really.
It comes back to that knowing yourself, right?
Yeah.
You become the best, mastering your creative craft, whatever that is, right? always comes back to that self element.
Yeah.
What I found really interesting, it's made me really think some stuff this evening, actually.
It's always good for a Monday night.
Yeah, thanks for being counsellors on a Monday.
You're welcome. Yeah, you are.
But actually, it's made me, you know, we get so wrapped up in a career and a job, etc. But actually, your job is to do those five key things that you can do well, which is quite often not your day job.
Yep.
They will make your day job easier and better.
I can't remember whether I talked about this, Tim, in my creative mornings talk, about the fact that I have five key tasks to do every single day. Is that in the creative mornings talk?
Actually.
No, at the beginning you said you write a list every morning.
Yeah. So part of my...
Power list, right?
Yeah, the power list, yeah. So, Andy Frisella, brilliant guy. It's very sweary, but brilliant. So I do the power list every day, and my power list never, ever has on it, take an amazing photograph. Yeah, it isn't. It's just invoice this, go for that run, you know, tidy the kitchen up. You know, it's Tuesday stuff, but it's Tuesday stuff that keeps the ball rolling. Like, if you go, well, I only do the work that I love, and that means I only ever pick up a camera when I feel inspired. Well, that's brilliant. Right up until the point where you need to invoice some clients or you need to look over the brief they've sent you. Like, it's not sexy work, but it's the stuff that you need to do in order to get the work to do it. Like, we've had for Super League Netball this weekend today, we've had all the run sheets for the whole weekend sent through. So this run sheet breaks down everything, like when people arrive, when people leave, like when Sky go live, all those kind of, like, and it's to the minute. Even actually, I lie, it's to the second for some of this, and it's pages and pages and pages and pages and pages long. And I'd love to say to sports photographers, yeah, you ain't got to worry about any of that, but actually, you really, for me and what I do, I really have to know that stuff, because that allows me to do the good work that's expected of me when I turn up. And if I don't know what that run sheet order is, and I don't know what that client brief is, and I haven't invoiced stuff properly, then it all starts to fall apart. And from a marketing point of view, like, something I learned about 18 months or so ago, ironically, before COVID hit, was that, like, my business has an ebb and flow to it, but actually I was finding myself, like, October through till February, I had nothing in the calendar, because the two main sports and the main sports that I were working with didn't have ongoing seasons at that point. So, like, I needed to be looking at something to fill that gap. Now, looking to fill that gap in December is the wrong time to do it. You need to be looking at filling that gap in the calendar way back in April and May, and, like, marketing for the whole of that rest of that year to gear yourself up to fill the gap. And, you know, it's not the sexy work that people see. You know, people see a beautiful piece of design, or they see a beautiful piece of art, or they see one of my photos, but they never see all the stuff that goes in behind it to make it happen. And the fact that that was probably the work for that was probably started 6 months ago. And it's the same with you, with your, like, marketing stuff. You'll put a marketing thing in place, and it won't actually be something that happens until 2023, because the company that you're working for has got to shift a few gears before it can get into that position, but it needs to know what the end goal is in order to get the gears shifted in the right way.
Yeah,
you're completely right.
Like, I'd love it. I'd love my life to just be sexy work all the time. It'd be brilliant, but it really isn't. It really isn't. You know, I've got to reply to emails, and I've got to reply to this, and I've got to think about how the business is going to look in 6 months' time, and, like, how do I juggle all of these commercial clients together, and, like, where am I kind of, what are my contracts looking like, and is a client using this image or passing this image onto a partner who's then used it to promote a product? Does that infringe rights and stuff that I've got for that image, or that the client have paid for that image? It isn't just taking awesome photos. It's not how it works. Like, and as I've said before, it's that you've also then got to have your commercial head on. If I didn't have to have my commercial head on, then my life would be a heck of a lot easier. Just be fun all day long. It wouldn't be Tuesdays.
That's it. It wouldn't be Tuesday. But it is.
A whole week of Saturdays. Yeah.
But this is part of mastery that a lot of people don't get. You know, what's that Abraham Lincoln quote? If I had to cut a tree down, I'd spend the first 6 hours sharpening the axe or something.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. the act of mastery isn't felling the tree. It's knowing that you need to sharpen the axe for 6 hours and that you need to walk around the machine for 9 minutes before you tap it once with the hammer. And, you know, it isn't just that final execution or that end product. It's all the stuff that you've done to build into that position. And clients find, I think, find that really hard at times, because that's the stuff they won't necessarily see, but that's the stuff you as a creative will bill for. Yeah. So, and if they don't have a good understanding of that, then it's really hard for them to wrap their brain around that massive invoice. But, you know, if you've worked with a client and you've built a really, really good relationship with you, with them, they'll understand why that invoice is the way it is, because they know that those 9 minutes of you walking around that machine before you tap it makes all the difference.
You've got to also know yourself well enough that you can ignore all those people who are walking past you going, what are you doing with the axe? Why aren't you chopping the tree now?
Yeah, like I have that.
Pick the tree up.
I have that now. Like I go to rugby games or football or whatever it might be, and you'll see all these photographers and stuff, just like machine guns going off all the time. And I'm the one kind of stood there and just watching, because I'm waiting for that player to go into that certain bit of light, or I'm waiting for that piece of action just to happen 2 meters further up so that I can get the photo that I want to get. And it's really, as a creative, it's really, really hard, because you don't want to be seen as the one who doesn't know what they're doing. So you have to have like complete faith in what you're doing and like just knowing what works. It's like the guy that raced past me this morning on my run, and he's joggers, like swinging his arms around like a crazy person. And I used to do this a lot on runs. I used to like tell myself, well, I'm not as good as them because they look faster, or they've got nicer run shoes on, or, you know, they're probably running an awful lot longer than I am, and why aren't they out of breath, and all those kind of crazy things you do. Whereas now it's like, well, okay, that person might be out for 2 miles, whereas I'm out for 30 miles, or, you know, that person might have been running for 50 years and it's probably one of the best runners in their age category, and, you know, they just don't compare. And it's removing that need to compare yourself to everybody else and just realizing that for me to do what I do best, I need to do these things. And whether that's on a day-to-day basis or whether that's on a everyone looking at you going, why are you sharpening the axe? Just swing it at the tree. It's like, you just need to know what works for you.
And that's why you've got to love your work, Tim.
It is.
Not work to love.
Yeah.
Good.
Because if you don't love what you do, then it makes it very hard to do the stuff on a Tuesday.
It's very good. That's a very good point. I have nothing more for this episode of you, Steve.
No.
In that case, eventually, after two sessions, I think we've finished our conversation.
You might be back in another series, Ben.
Yeah. when I get a message in 20 minutes' time. Actually, we've been having a chat.
But that'll be good. Mate, thank you very much.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been really, really awesome. Thank you for having me.
We've got you. We've got all your details and your links and such from the previous episode, so we shall reappend those on the end of this one.
Lovely.
Thank you for being our first part two, mate.
Well, thank you.
Pleasure. All right. See you later.
See ya.